Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. We're just days away from GE15 nomination day, and news of seat allocations and candidate announcements have been trickling in over the past few days. And we're starting to get a glimpse of what the candidate lineup might look like come Saturday. What does the candidate list so far tell us about the calculations and the strategies going into GE15? Joining us now is Professor Dr. Kartini Abu Talib. She's the Deputy Director of the Institute of Ethnic Studies at University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Dr. Kartini, thank you for joining me today. If I may begin with a PKR, what are your thoughts on PKR's announced candidate lineup? I mean, there have been a number of incumbents that have been dropped, and several fresh faces are being fielded this time around. This was a strategy that they used in Melaka, but one that did not pay off. What do you make of them using this strategy going into GE15?
Okay, if we have to look at PKR, overall PKR has a good lineup. We now know that Anwar will be contesting in Tambun, Izzah retaining contesting in Pematang Pau, Rafizi in Pandan, Amiruddin Syari in Gombak against Azmin Ali. Overall, it is good. But we can observe from Pakatan Harapan decision, especially PKR, to drop a few big names like Siva Rasa, MP of Sungai Buloh, Maria Chin of PJ, Lee Boon Chai, Dr. Lee Boon Chai in MP Gompeng, Charles Santiago, and another big name is Hanifah Maidin. For all we know that these MPs are well known for being vocal against corruption and promoting integrity. They also won big in GE14. I think perhaps replacing previous MP could be an opportunity as well as a risk that the PH has to bear. People may see replacing this big name as a strategy of improving image, perhaps. But being outspoken means among the rakyat, there will be a group of people who agree or disagree or disregard them. That could be reason for them to actually replacing this big name with the new faces, especially in PKR lineup.
Is it a gamble to go with fresh faces? I know Malaysians say they're tired of the same old, same old. They want to see fresh faces. But do you think that this might be a strategy that will pay off, that voters might vote for an unfamiliar face as opposed to, say, an incumbent that they are familiar with in the past two or three terms?
That's a very good question, Melissa. We know that when it comes to track record, people, especially voters, they are accumulating the KPI, performance index, and all the track record by the previous MPs. It could be a bad strategy replacing the MPs who won big in these seats. To me, it's not a good strategy. But some say that it could be a good strategy in terms of attracting new voters and also carrying a new image. As I said earlier, it could be an opportunity, it could be a risk, something that PH has to bear, and PH has to be able to calculate carefully or deliberately in terms of replacing this kind of strategy with the new faces. I like Siva Rasa, Marina Chin. People know Marina Chin and Siva Rasa. And also Charles Santiago. Replacing them, it could be a risk. And it could be also an opportunity for PKR, who seeing that they have been so vocal, people know them of their strong against corruption and promoting integrity. So they could have group of people that agree with them, a group of people who disagree and disregard them. So replacing them could be another opportunity that PKR or PH might see or might calculate and hoping that it would be a benefit to them.
Well, looking at the coalition, Pakatan Coalition, and the internal party dynamics between DAP and Amanah. So DAP has said that it has a plan to court rural Malay voters. However, this gambit for the Malay heartland is putting it in direct friction with Amanah. Both of the parties clashing over the Changkat Jong seat in Perak. Ultimately, that seat went to DAP. Do you, I see pundits have often said that PH's problem, and particularly with DAP, has been in convincing the Malay voters. Do you think the messaging has changed much?
Okay, first and foremost, we can see that Amanah has a valid reason to defend the Dun Changkat Jong seat, because the negotiation was DAP candidates will contest in Dun Pasir Berdamar and also Teluk Intan parliamentary seat. And I think it is just fair for DAP to consider Amanah as the contestant for Changkat Jong. But yet again, going back to the argument that DAP is actually willing to give a better opportunity, more line-up to the Malays in order to attract the Malays voters, it could be true. We can see that how DAP simply announced Yang Sefura to contest in Bentong, Sharlina in Bukit Bendera. We can see Fatin Zulaikha Zaidi in Bersing and also Sheikh Umar Bagharib Ali, just to name a few. Sheikh Umar Bagharib will be contesting in Air Hitam. And also we can see that how Bentong become a very controversial seat when DAP decided to announce Yang Sepura to contest in Bentong. Unnominated for Wong Tak. Wong Tak decided to exit DAP and declare to contest as independent candidate. We can see that DAP is crucial. Crucial for DAP to actually name more of the Malays candidates for representing DAP in this GE15.
But Dr. Kartini, everyone is going after the Malay vote. There are so many Malay-based parties going after the Malay vote. It has never been as splintered as it is going into GE15. What do you think? Is the Malay vote still as powerful as all these parties seem to think it is?
For DAP perspective, they need the Malay votes to support them. Because they knew that they can win the Malay voters in urban areas. But maybe they have to struggle in more of the rural area. But yet again, as you said earlier, Melissa, that we now facing where there are few more others, Malays party representing the Malay parties. And of course, we can see that there will be a few corners of representing UMNO, Amanah, PKR, PAS, Warisan, Muda and so many more. But when they put themselves as representing the alliance under one roof, they are willing to tolerate and be able to see how the contest in the Malay constituent or the Malay area will define the kind of leadership that the Malay decide to choose. Mm. It's no longer
That's
about the party, DAP is also representing the Malays. So we can see the dilute, the meaning of the Malays and the race is becoming so dilute. Because they have idea of, being tolerant. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. But unfortunately, Dr. Kartini, we have to go to break now. And I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show tonight. Dr. Kartini Abu Talib from UKM. We're going to take a quick break here. Consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. My next guest is Shazwan Mustafa Kamal. He's an associate director at the government affairs consultancy Rins & Partners. Shazwan, thank you for joining me today. What are your observations about DAP's candidate selection? If I may begin there, what does the lineup reveal to you about their election strategy?
I think the current lineup does reveal a lot about, you know, DAP's sort of like plan post GE15. Actually, you do see a concerted effort to place obviously younger leaders in line with, I think the variable that's basically first time voters, but more importantly, and I think this was raised earlier as well, the sort of influx of young Malay leaders. But beyond that, actually, you actually see a consolidation of forces within the party. Of leaders that are aligned to the ruling camps of the party, as opposed to some leaders who don't exist within the various camps within the party, and then you actually see an exodus of those leaders, either forcefully or, you know, willingly.
Are you seeing the same kind of trend within PKR as well? Because PKR just announced their candidate selection. Are you seeing similar types of, you know, factionalism being kind of pushed aside or being pushed to one side within PKR's candidate lineup?
So I think the story with PKR here is that I think it's twofold. One is that you do see the party being led really by Rafizi this time around, and actually the sort of like machinations in terms of the candidates really sort of balancing the politicians, the activists, as well as the academics. That's why you got a few new faces coming in. Obviously, this decision may not have come as something that was planned for a very long time, because you see already fissures within the various grassroots divisions, some unhappiness over candidates that obviously weren't grassroots candidates that sort of came in at the last minute. But at the same time, you also see a purge of various leaders that were possibly aligned to Azmin's faction or those who were in the Sheraton move before this, but you know, chose to remain loyal with PKR. But for whatever reasons, they weren't fielded. And I think you actually see a couple of them actually, most notably the likes of Tian Chua, and I think even Ginny Lim, party veterans who have been with the party through thick and thin, but obviously got their comeuppance this time around, just because I think they're making it clear who is going to be fielded and who's in control of the party.
Right. Shazwan, can I get your thoughts on how voters might view the trade-off in how political parties decide where and who to field in GE15? You know, on one hand, you have these incumbents who have undoubtedly served their constituents well, they're familiar, they're efficient, but they may not be fielded. Do you think that voters may see that as a mistake? Or, you know, on the other hand, we have this opportunity for making way for younger candidates, female candidates, new candidates, fresh candidates, giving an opportunity for new politicians to serve in their turn. How do you think voters might react to that strategy that PKR and DAP is adopting?
I think voters' reaction would depend on how the various parties that you just mentioned communicate, you know, the reasons or rationale behind these strategies. Obviously, if it's a push towards, you know, younger professionals, then PKR ought to make it clear. And I think they have to some extent been doing so. But there are cases like, for instance, DAP, and you talk about the clang seat, Charles Santiago, caused undeniably a lot of a ripple effect, and actually a lot of a backlash within voters, really, who were shocked. Because on one hand, you had this really one of the few key performing MPs for the past three terms, who is synonymous with the constituency, and you sort of replaced him with someone who I believe voters had actually, you know, had issues with during his term as a state assembly person. So, I mean, obviously, there is a wider, bigger strategy behind the party's decision to sort of formulate your candidates. But really, there is a fine balance to be played with. You know, if you're going to do this, you got to make sure that your explanation, your narrative is watertight. Mm. And I think the DAP case is a perfect example how it's not, because they're really scrambling to try and contain the narrative right now.
Right. So communication, messaging is key. And I wonder on that note about Muda's messaging and Muda's communication over whether Syed Saddiq should contest in GE15. There have been demands for him to stand down in this election. What do you think the considerations are? What are the optics? Should he stand or should he stand down?
Yeah, Muda is in a very difficult place, I think. You know, obviously, there have been growing calls for Saddiq to show leadership by example and stand down just because of his, the prima facie case and his court case. But on the other hand, it's like, I think their sense is that if he does step down, then it's like sort of an omission. But, you know, if he doesn't, then, you know, damn if you do, damn if you don't, I think. And I think, I don't think the strategy would be to stand down, would be innocent until proven guilty, as with all politicians. But I guess the challenge is that how much of that approach would prove detrimental to Muda, really, because I think Muda right now, its major challenge is to sort of like groom your leaders beyond Sheikh Saddiq to sort of position themselves as the faces of the party. And they, to their credit, they have been doing so for the past year, but, you know, Sheikh Saddiq remains a looming presence over Muda. Obviously, the case will impact Muda. What Muda does not need to do is that what Muda does not want to get itself into is, you know, be that party that gravitates around the fate of one leader. I mean, we all know how other parties have done so in the past. So I think a cautionary tale for Muda, a chance and opportunity for Muda to avoid falling in that same trap. Whether they do so or not, we'll be able to find out in a few days' time. But I, for one, believe that Saddiq will still contest. And just because I think they are that 13th hour of, you know, getting the negotiations with Pakatan Harapan right. So I don't think they want to spoil that as well. So it remains to be seen, but I do foresee Saddiq in the race.
We will find out soon, I think later this week. Shazwan, in the couple of minutes that we have left, I do want to ask you as a political observer, this period of election season, everything gets heightened, particularly conservative and racial sentiments. Are you observing that? Are we seeing racial and conservative sentiments being played up? And what do you think voters should be mindful of?
I do. Oddly enough, I have not seen that many instances of it so far. But then again, we are still in early days. I do foresee things to ramp up once official campaigning starts after nomination day this weekend. The usual things would be for voters to look out for would be, you know, boogeyman issues. There will be probably incidents, you know, public events that get turned into perhaps something racial, you know, a sleight of hand, slip of the tongue by a candidate or aspirant. I think voters should be cognizant of the issues that circulate on social media and be careful, especially because obviously the various cyber troopers or your political assassins online are being sort of like hired by the hour right now. So you will see this, you know, coming to play, I think, closer to the election. But for now, it appears to be sort of muted. But, you know, give it time. I have faith in, you know, the in politicians resorting to the old playbook.
Okay, so everyone to remain vigilant in the coming days and weeks. Shazwan, thank you for joining me. Shazwan Mustafa Kamal of Rins & Partners. We're going to take another quick break. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hello, I'm Melissa Idris. Thank you so much for staying with me on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation about the GE15 candidates who have been revealed so far. My next guest is Dr. Oh Ihsan. He's a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Ihsan, I'd like to ask you the same question I've posed to my other guests tonight. Looking at Pakatan Harapan's candidate list this year, we saw a number of incumbents being dropped. Are you encouraged by the fresh faces, or do you agree with PKR veteran Tian Chua's warning that, quote, shuffling MPs and parliamentary seats like cards will not only hurt grassroots support, but will also frustrate voters? What do you think, Ihsan?
Well, of course, in our parliamentary system, the voters will vote for both the parties as well as the candidates representing those parties, right? So it's always a question of what is the proportion between the two. Would a voter vote for a particular candidate more because of his personality or because of the party he or she is representing? I think in Malaysia's context, mostly for the opposition, namely for, let's say, both the Pakatan Harapan and other opposition parties, I think most of their supporters perhaps identify more with the parties rather than the candidates. So when they look at the party logo, they feel that this is a party they could support, you know, against parties whom they don't like. And then, of course, if you have a more charismatic candidate, it will add to that but I don't see it as being personalities over party logos. Yeah.
Okay, on that note, if I may ask you about one of the biggest personalities in the Malaysian political scene, Tun Dr. Mahathir, with Gerakan Tanah Air GTA, the possibility of building alliances with other political coalitions seem to be slowly withering for GTA. Do you think the future is bleak there, or do you think Tun Dr. Mahathir might be the personality it needs, the rallying force that he was in GE14? Does he have one more election in him where he can be that star personality again?
Well, again, if you are fighting from the opposition side, it's a combo between the party and the personality, right? Dr. Mahathir, of course, would have a larger-than-life personality, having, you know, having helmed this country for more than two decades and having a lot of achievements. But with just himself and, shall we say, the skeletal framework of his GTA, I think it will be very difficult for him and his GTA to make a lot of inroads in the coming general election. If Dr. Mahathir, on the other hand, were to link up once again, for example, with PH, and PH is willing to give him another chance to work with him and so on, then perhaps this combo, well, it has proven to be successful in 2018, right? It could of course, increase Pakatan Harapan's chances at this election. Yeah.
Oh, it might increase. Okay, do you think that that's a likely scenario, Pakatan teaming up with Mahathir once again?
Well, I think by now, I mean, of course, I wouldn't rule that totally out, but I think it's slightly late, isn't it? Because you still need some time to persuade the voters and so on. I think the fundamental problem with Pakatan is the fact that they could not make a significant inroad into the conservative Malay majority voter base in this country. And although Dr. Mahathir could only perhaps make that a little bit of inroads, but a little bit is better than nothing at all, right? So I think if there is this combo between Dr. Mahathir and Pakatan, possibly you could make slightly more inroads into the conservative Malay majority voter base, and thereby Pakatan Harapan's chances of being successful would be increased. Yeah.
All right. So we're days away from nomination day on Saturday. We've got some candidates announced so far. What seats do you think are shaping up to be interesting to watch, Isan?
Well, of course, those seats which we see, for example, the three-corner fights, right? Between BN and PH, but also where PN could perhaps make more significant inroads. Those would be interesting seats to watch. In Sabah's context and in some West Malaysian seats, you will also see Warisan also making a debut against, like DAP and so on. So would that split the opposition votes, for example? So all this would be sort of interesting seats to watch, yeah.
All right. Isan, thank you so much for speaking to me on the show. Dr. Oh Isan from the Singapore Institute of International Studies there, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.